Would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Curtis Rausch.
Amazing. And you're representing?
Curtis Rausch.
There's this band since 2004. Take me way back before 2004. Okay. Take me back. Were there bands before that?
Sure. I was in high school bands. I started playing.
Tell me about those. Tell me the names.
Yeah. And the first band was a metal band called Avulsion. You know, it's like when a bone or something is separated from your body, or like a finger comes off.
Nice. Hey, you know, on a Saturday morning at South by Southwest, there's nothing like scraping some bone.
Yeah, absolutely. We played some Metallica covers, and didn't really have any sense of timing or anything, but you know.
Didn't get signed, I take it.
Absolutely not. Played a couple shows at like a local park where high school bands would play.
So were you formally trained?
No, I guess not. I took some guitar lessons in high school. But I went to just normal college and studied non-musical things.
What'd you study?
Political science. And
then, wow, that handy for today, I guess.
I suppose so. I don't know if you need like a background in political science to have a feel for what's going on right now. So.
Yes, touche on that one.
It's bad in a generic sense, you know, just simply bad. Played in a few other bands. There's a band I played in called Eiderdown. I think that's when the metal started kind of drifting into, you know, just kind of more alternative rock. And just as that band was kind of starting to fall away, like we played local shows around Austin and stuff, I met Jack O'Brien at college, my bandmate in the Bright Light Social Hour, and we started that band.
You've made a living at that.
I don't know if we've made a living at it.
You had some things to say due to a death. Was that really the genesis of going solo?
I think it was a variety of things all at the same time. I had like a number of sort of life traumas in the same year. Like I got out of a relationship that I'd been in for 4 years, and had the death of Jack's brother, the Bright Light Social Hour's former manager, happen. And so there was a lot of kind of personal processing. The music of the Bright Light Social Hour tends not to be as personal. It's usually, we write songs about political or sci-fi concepts, or, you know, something, narratives that are outside ourselves, a little more abstract. And so I felt like the best way I could express some of these more personal traumas would be to write my own songs about them.
How did you go about saying, okay, I'm going to internalize all this, and then I'm going to share it? And how do you concept a record like that when there's so many things and think, okay, this is also something that my audience is going to want to hear?
Well, the record started out as just individual songs, and they probably started out with the intention of writing them for the Bright Light Social Hour. I think in terms of some of the theme and in the style of music, particularly sort of the volume and the dynamics of the music, didn't quite fit with the rest of what we were doing. I would bring in a song, and quite often the guys would like a song or something, but like, man, we're writing a lot of like kind of softer, more introspective music or something. You know, like what's up with that? But I kept writing these songs until I had a few of them, and they went together. You know, I started seeing that they like had a relationship with each other, these songs. And then the idea of the album comes from that. You know, it's like I'm getting a few songs that have a relationship. Maybe they'll go out into the world together or something, you know.
It's a pretty lush record. So let's get geeky. But going to tape.
I don't think any of us are like tape zealots by any means. Like we use a lot of Pro Tools and digital recording in our world too. I really like the workflow better of digital. I work so much faster. You know, the confines of 24-track analog tape for my record was just a fun way to capture the fact that I was just doing it, you know, playing all the instruments myself, so like I could just fill up a track of this tape at a time and just kind of like tangibly watch the record grow on this, you know, magnetic medium.
So where did you do this?
Cacophony Recorders here in Austin. It's Eric Wofford's place. He's had for about 15 years here in town. It's a big loft space over on the east side on Cesar Chavez. He has a console, works to analog tape. In a lot of ways, it's a sort of tribute to an older time of recording, but not like a vintage-oriented studio. I think the studio's aesthetic covers a lot of ground. He probably got his recording start in the local scene, or maybe some notoriety from his work on The Black Angels, Explosions in the Sky. More recently, he's done records for Adam Torres, Molly Birch, a lot of, you know, Austin's brightest, you know, younger bands.
You're putting it together, you write the songs, and when you're saying you went in and kind of, as you had something, you tracked it. How long did it take you to realize this thing?
Well, I demoed the whole record out myself. The band, the Bright Light Social Hour, has a recording space. I have a little recording space at home. I kind of put the record together, demoing out all the arrangements. Originally, I had the intention of just recording it myself, but wasn't quite getting the sonic aesthetic I was wanting out of it. And you know, after the record was, the blueprints of it were together, I wanted a partner to help make it something more.
You recorded it in 2016.
Yeah, very late 2016.
So you have this solo thing and you go, okay, where am I going to put it? And you chose, and I again, the audience knows when it's the appropriate people, whether it was Walker Lukens last year or, you know, that you chose Mod Out. You chose Modern Outsiders. So did they find you? Did you find them?
We had a lot of mutual friends. I'm buddies with Walker, and I, from afar had observed what seemed like good work done on his stuff, and you know, just mutual friends introduced Chip and Aaron and I, and I liked them a lot. I
who doesn't like Chip and Aaron? I mean, what's not to like about Chip and Aaron?
It's nice to just have a pretty like human relationship with label people. I think sometimes music industry folks, this is generalizing, of course, can sort of promise you, you know.
Yeah, wait. You think? Really? I haven't been at this for a long time, but you think.
Yeah. And it's nice that conversations with them are more direct, more honest. You know, we have clear expectations out of, you know, us working together. I'd like them.
So talk to me about that, because you've got a band that's been around for a long time. When you sit down and you say, okay, I'm making a solo record, and you have a band that it doesn't really matter what level of reality the band got to, right? But signed band, made a bunch of records, you know, known, and, you know, has gotten to a certain level. And then you go, okay, well, I'm going to do this solo. How do you balance that out? And do you say, well, I want this solo record to be big, and I want to, you know, tour around it and all of that, but then I've also got the band. How do you kind of rationalize and go through all of that? And what do you think about with this record?
I think it would probably be different for everyone in a similar situation, but the Bright Light Social Hour ends up working pretty slowly on an album. We'll write a set of songs, scrap them, write another set, scrap them for a few years before we get an album together.
So that's why you're together so long. You've only written 12 songs.
Basically, yeah. We only have 2 full-length albums. We've just completed a third, and I had an opportunity kind of between these processes to stick my own in there, you know. It doesn't really take much time or energy away from the Bright Light Social Hour, because it's just a moving vessel of its own.
But this lovely business these days where the whole thing has changed, and the money is in touring and merch and syncs and all of that. So how much, I mean, this album was a very personal album. But, and it's evil for me to ask this, but I ask it all the time. As you're writing it, do you think at all about, well, you know, I want really a lot of people to hear the story, and I want radio play, and I want all, do you think about that at all?
Not in the writing. I wrote these songs primarily as sort of musical comfort food or something for myself.
Great name for a third album, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Musical comfort food. It'll have like a real thoughtful picture of like my, you know, like chin on my fist or something. This is one of the nice things about working with a label, is like I like having some direction on the business end of it that doesn't come from me, as I'd prefer to spend as much time as possible just writing and producing music and not really having all that much of a concern on like where it should go in the world or who should hear it. I like the abstract idea of people hearing it, but who exactly and how it gets to them, I'm a little agnostic on. I think I've resigned the fact of having like a set of expectations, like I need to have a certain amount of like income or like financial achievement by a certain age or something. Doing this is just an inevitability. Like I'm a lifer at this point. Like I'll orient my life in a way where I don't, you know, for example, I live with my parents, you know, and I don't care. Like it enables me to like
gives you the freedom to do what you want to do.
My wife and I live with my parents in the suburbs outside of Austin, and you know, having low overhead means I can just constantly write music and have a little studio space where I can constantly record.
But you don't have like, you wake up in the morning and it's like, okay, so Curtis, when are you gonna get a real job?
No, I'm pretty tight with my parents.
Are you going to tour behind this puppy now? I mean,
I'd like to, yeah. Yeah, we have a set of, we're putting together some regional shows in May, and hopefully the summer will turn regional into some smaller national legs before Brightly Social Hour gets kind of back up and going for another record of theirs. So I'm going to try to stick in some tours before that happens.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Right.
And what it is two of you, have you been warned about this?
Yeah, I listened to some shows too.
Oh no, you're prepared. Well, I'll do it so I say it properly. Invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread and songs by others in between.